Hello everyone, and welcome to this Google VetNet Career Week session, where we are going to focus on developing and deploying an effective elevator pitch. I'm Nick Panos, a senior cybersecurity advisor in the Google Cloud Office of the CISO. Before joining Google, I spent over 20 years on active duty, and I can tell you from my own transition experience that an elevator pitch is an essential tool to introduce yourself, summarize your accomplishments, and state your career goals in front of a potential employer. This session will cover the elements of an effective pitch, common mistakes to avoid, and various situations where you might consider deploying your personalized elevator pitch. In just a few minutes, I'll be joined by subject matter experts from Breakline, a top-tier career placement service here in North America. But first, let's start by looking at an elevator pitch with significant room for improvement. Thanks again for joining, and I'll be back with you shortly. Enrique, thank you so much for joining us today for this virtual career fair. What can you tell us about yourself?
Hey, well, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it. I'm recently retired Navy Intel Officer 1830, just coming off of a joint assignment supporting UCOM, although we're doing it out of a skiff in Fort Sheridan. So I had local, you know, sailors and some enlisted folks, officers. Primarily, I was a department head, you know, so I had a whole department there that I was working on with, you know, op intel production. We're doing a lot of briefing to, you know, to the senior folks in UCOM. Sometimes we're doing that via SVTC. Sometimes we're doing it in person. A lot of travel to the Joint Analysis Center, Jack Molesworth, out in the UK. Sometimes we'd go to UCOM HQ in Stuttgart. My department really worked on sort of op intel support for the UCOM AOR, you know, sort of tactical intel, some strategic topics, intelligence officer, foreign intelligence officer presence, trying to figure out who they were. A lot of classified production, in fact, all of it was pretty much classified. So we worked on the JWICS enclave a lot, you know, intel sharing with maybe other commands that were adjacent to UCOM, so AFRICOM, CENTCOM, things like that. In terms of, like, you know, working with this department, you know, I did a lot of sort of personnel matters, you know, dealing with, you know, FIT reps and Army OERs, the Air Force equivalent of that as well. We also trained some of our junior folks on intelligence PQRs, you know, getting them up to speed. And also did a lot of in-person classified briefings for senior GOFOs that were coming in and out of theater, doing, you know, pre-deployment training, things like that. So really interested in sort of like leveraging that and trying to figure out a way to translate that into the civilian world.
Wow. It, well, first off, thank you very much for your service. And it sounds like you have quite a lot of responsibility. So thanks for sharing that today. And maybe if you could circle back after my colleagues and I have a chance to confer, we could dive in a little deeper here.
Yeah, sounds great. Looking forward to it. Thanks very much for doing this.
Okay, welcome back. I'm now joined by Mac Bladney, the partner education lead at Breakline, and her colleague Lauren Fall, director of advancement, also with Breakline. Breakline's mission is to connect exciting companies with incredible talent. The organization is currently working alongside over 200 of the world's best companies and institutional investors and helping them build top-performing teams. Breakline's community of over 25,000 job seekers spanning a wide variety of backgrounds and areas of expertise allows them to quickly team up with partners to fill their highest priority roles within weeks. So, Mac, Lauren, thank you very much for leaning in and supporting Google VetNet's Career Week here. What did we think? Mac, maybe you could kick us off of that first elevator pitch.
Of course. Yeah. Thanks for throwing that over, Nick. I think, you know, my first initial reaction is that's a whole lot of letters, right? A whole lot of alphabet soup, tons of jargon, especially coming from somebody on my end, right, who doesn't have that direct military experience. It can be very otherworldly, right, to hear all of these different acronyms and words and things that you don't even have definitions for. And I think that was probably one of the kind of biggest things outside of just the length of time, right, of taking a pretty long time to get to the meat, right, get to to the part that really shows your the value you're going to bring on day one, right? Like that is kind of the crux of the elevator pitch, is to be able to show someone day one, not just what, you know, what you bring as far as like a skill set with work, but how you're going to utilize your passions and do that for them on day one. And I think that was really lost in his initial pitch.
I see that. I really appreciate the feedback and the perspective there on how we're going to balance the needs of a civilian employer with the accomplishments of the transitioning veteran there, and how some things can kind of get lost in the middle there. Can I ask a question about how you perceived the desire for a specific role and how that matched with background? Did you see a little bit of misalignment? Was that tough to follow?
I think, yeah, that's that last line, right? It was very hard to follow where he was intending to take his skill set, right? Like what parts of his skill set he was actually looking to pull out and utilize. I think it can get really easy sometimes when you're inside of your elevator pitch to feel like you've got to distill every piece of your background, right? And find things about each part of your background to pull out. But sometimes that doesn't actually lend itself to the role that you're looking to jump towards, right? And so being able to be very clear and lining up what parts really align from what you've already done to what they're going to need you to do, and being clear about that, right? Like not being afraid at the end of your elevator pitch to be clear on like, this is where I see myself using this skill set in this way, and really being able to draw the line for them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Lauren, can you talk us through, let's tear that one down and rebuild it. What are some things that should be front of mind there when crafting that compelling elevator pitch?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, Enrique, it's very clear that he's got some great expertise and he's got some great experiences and skills and people. But I have been around the military pretty much my entire life, and there were acronyms and words that I didn't even understand that were part of this, right? So really trying to understand and unpack what a lot of that looks like is certainly a challenge kind of moving forward. That is one that I think it's an easy thing to unpack when you start kind of just like taking out the layers a little bit more of what he has done, right? So I think that like when you start off your background, your experience, you want to make sure that you understand there's a difference between executive presence and command presence, right? Like in this command presence that so many military veterans come to the table with, that they think this is how I need to show up. But in reality, there's got to be a little bit more translation happening. And you have to do that translation prior to the conversation and put the work in prior to those conversations, not in the moment. So when I look at a background, for example, with Enrique, his background is in intelligence, right? And so like that is the foundation of what all the roles after 20 something years in the military, he's got this intelligence background foundation that we want to be able to explain in terms that your civilian audience is going to understand, and then give them really specific kind of guidance as to where that, what that kind of leads to, what's next in his role, right? And what he's looking for in his career as his next step. So the first thing that, you know, I would call out here, he's got, he had, as Mac pointed out, like just in the jargon for days, right? And that's what I consider exclusionary language. Anything that's exclusionary language is like the military jargon or things like saying, hey, this is classified, can't talk about it. Anything like that's going to make you sound different. Your goal is to sound not only the same, but relevant to your audience, right? So being able to kind of unpack that and give a very different perspective about what this 20 plus year experience is, that your audience is going to say, I didn't know I needed an intel officer from the Navy. Turns out that's exactly what I need. That's what we want their takeaway to be.
Oh, fantastic. So, you know, effectively framing that transition to in a way that's relevant and broad seems to be, not seems to be, is actually very, very important here, but it may be a frequent misstep. As we think about framing and when to deploy this, and Mac, if I could come back to you here, can we think about the career transition timeline? Enrique may have been a little bit behind the ball here if he's just now looking for a job because he's recently retired. But if we could play that back, where would we first start deploying this this elevator pitch? Like how far in advance of somebody's separation date or retirement date should we start leaning in?
Yeah, absolutely. So we generally say around the 90-day mark, right? About 90 days from when you know that you're going to have to, you know, you're going to kind of officially finish with that transition, right? So you're doing that so that you don't have that large kind of gap of time where now you're trying to get the ball rolling and you're trying to build some of that momentum, right, early on in the start. And a lot of times you're going to be able to kind of start to deploy that elevator pitch when you're going to those career conferences, right? When you're having those one-off kind of networking informational conversations with folks that, you know, maybe you've worked with in the past or new people, right? And companies that you're trying to make headway into, but also during those initial kind of conversations with recruiters as well, being able to kind of have a crafted elevator pitch for each of those scenarios is what we recommend.
Megan, thanks for that. I will tell you from personal experience with my own transition, the pressure that you start to feel when you hear numbers floating around out there, oh, a year prior, you need to be locked into where you're going next. I think we know that's not possible. Companies don't hire a year out. That 90-day time frame is, I think, valuable to keep in mind, you know, that that most employers begin their on-ramping process at that point. So thank you very much for that. Lauren, can we think about, so we've got that 90-day window in mind. Now, as we start to channel our energies, thinking about roles, companies, sectors, et cetera, is there a paradigm that that might be valuable as we deploy this elevator pitch in various ways?
Absolutely. So I think there's a couple of ways to kind of frame out the beginning parts of your search, right? Like being able to understand, you know, it's a personal journey, right? Every single person that's going through this transition has a lot of decisions they have to make for themselves. It's personal to themselves and what their priorities are. We have a career discovery strategy that we like to use, kind of walking through of a Venn diagram. And the very first bucket in that Venn diagram, the first circle, is going to be those experiences. And it's going to be those skill sets. It's going to be like those, for some people, it's going to be technical skills or a degree, or it's going to be, you know, certain experiences they've had. For others, for example, we saw in Enrique's, he's in a customer-facing role, right? That is the skill, right? Being an intelligence officer, you have a product that you're serving to an end user. Could be an internal end user, but still a customer, right? That you're serving, that you're providing a service or a product to. So being able to say, okay, like being in a customer-facing role is experience. It's a skill set that you have to offer. I think for a lot of veterans, as you're transitioning out, it's important to also understand that you might have a domain expertise or a subject matter expertise. And while, like, if they're interviewing for Google, for example, you're not going to talk about certain weapon systems. But if you're interviewing for a defense tech company, we want to know that you have certain experience with domain, like with that weapon system, or, you know, within certain communities within the military, or geographic locations or regions that you might be an expert in, right? So we're going to want to hear that in the elevator pitch right off the bat, those skills that you have. But it's not going to be relevant to every audience. And in fact, when you talk about weapon systems when you're interviewing for Google, it's the opposite. It's not helpful at all, right? It's distracting, right? It's going to be exclusionary. And people are going to say, oh, that sounds cool, but I have no idea how that's relevant, right? So, but then that first bucket, really kind of starting to unpack what you have been doing, what expertise and what skills that you have. The second bucket is going to be the passion stuff. Like, it's kind of like, you know, what Mac was referring to earlier. It's going to be like, what kinds of companies are exciting to you? What kind of roles? And there might be a variety of these things, right? It could be, I want to work at a really big company that's got a lot of opportunities for growth, and it's got opportunities for me to get mentored and to be in a position to learn a lot. For other people, it might be, I want to be in a small earlier stage company where I can kind of, you know, wear multiple hats and roll up my sleeves and just kind of, you know, dig in. And with that grind is exciting to me. But that's, you know, all these different things are passion things. Sometimes they're mission alignment. A lot of veterans, as they're, you know, leaving a place of ultimate service, you know, you're looking for mission alignment somewhere else as well. And so understanding kind of, you know, where that falls for you is big part of it. And then the final circle or bucket here in our Venn diagram is going to be limiting factors, right? These limiting factors are these honest to God moments where you have to be honest with yourself and say, all right, where am I looking to get to live? Geographic locations. Am I willing to relocate? Am I willing to be in a, you know, a larger city in order to take an opportunity that, you know, that might be further away from family, even after I've been away from family for, you know, my whole career thus far. That might be something about compensation, right? Are you, you know, is there a certain kind of amount that you have to make bottom line for your lifestyle, to maintain your lifestyle and that of your families? So there's, you know, different limiting factors that you have to consider and factor into it as well. As you're identifying and kind of walking yourself through this, that middle spot, that's where we want to focus on with the content of your elevator pitch, right? Like being able to say, okay, this is my audience that I'm speaking to. These are the things that I got to be mindful of as I'm identifying specific roles, functions, jobs, you know, any of those kind of things as well. And then the, you know, going back to that first bucket of like, these are the kind of opportunities that are going to allow me to leverage these skills in particular and to bring them forward.
A lot of information to kind of distill down to what matters. I think we saw in the first in this first elevator pitch, started to get a little long, and that dilutes what really matters there. Mac, is there a guideline for how long an elevator pitch should be? In Breakline's experience here.
Yeah, absolutely. So generally speaking, we see about 60 seconds is about how long any of our attention spans can really hang in there. I would say maybe like 10 seconds over the 60 seconds, you're still doing okay. Anything more than that, and you're going to start losing people. And we also find that you've got probably about 6 or 7 seconds in the beginning to start to grab someone's attention, right? To start to build that rapport, little things like showing gratitude, remembering someone's name. That's kind of like the general time bucket.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, we in our prep for this session, we used a phrase, boiling the ocean there. And that's tough when you're trying to do too much at the same time. But Lauren, I really like the way you phrased this. Remember, your idea is to get to the interview where you're going to have another 29 minutes because you're going to talk for 30 minutes with that recruiter after you've made it through that frontline recruiter. So we've laid out a good timeline to think about 90 days prior, a good amount of time for that elevator pitch, 60 seconds, maybe plus or minus 10 seconds there. And then really the heart of what we want to hit on, high points of education and experience, and then a role that you see yourself fitting into. So in our before we wrap and we go back to a more polished elevator pitch, we're going to assume Enrique's gotten these coaching points. But let's run through some gotchas that we've seen. We hit on one with boiling the ocean. What are some others that Breakline sees in your work with transitioning vets across the country?
So many. I could have a whole session just on the gotcha stuff, but I think some of the things that we hear a lot are, they're outside of the obvious military jargon, things of that nature. But like, I led a team of Marines, I led a team of sailors, right? Like, you're automatically like kind of going into this mindset of like, okay, well, if you led a team of Marines, I just did what you told them to do because you were in charge and you're hierarchical and structured and all of these things. And that couldn't be further from the truth from a lot of the skills that these veterans are bringing to the table. But you led a team. Period. Right. Like, it's not a team of Marines. It's not a team of sailors. It's just a team. I led a team. Those things. When I also think through rank structures, oftentimes ranks are confusing. Enlisted ranks, officer ranks, people don't know the difference outside of it. The way that I also kind of frame out the military rank structure when you're talking about it and you're translating it, if you're talking about a flag officer, I would call it executive leader. A 3 or a 4 star is a senior executive leader. 05 or an 06 is going to be director level. Anything below that's manager or team lead, depending on the specific role that you've held, right? So being really intentional with how you're translating your background. And I always recommend people translate it before you're actually in the conversation, right? Don't translate it in the middle of it. Don't say, well, I was a captain, which is kind of like an operations team lead, right? Like, just go into it and call yourself an operations team lead. The one thing that I always feel like I shouldn't have to say it, but I do, just because you are a company commander does not make you the CEO of a company. You hear that all the time, right? Like, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, the Chief of Naval Operations, they are the CEOs, right? Like, so understanding how you're framing your experience and where that kind of fits into like a larger organization is really helpful for someone that doesn't understand the military to understand leveling and like kind of overall the areas of expertise or the management, the kind of the scope of work that you've held as well.
Mac, can you do
that? Yeah, I was going to say, I love that, Lauren, and I'd actually like to kind of piggyback a little bit off of the thought you were kind of giving around being able to like translate that experience, right? You're going into a room, people may not know anything, right? That's not a world that they've played in. So also be aware of that double pivot. Right. Be aware that you're not just explaining the time that you've had in the military, but if you're looking at, also transitioning into a role that let's say you've been in Intel and now you're super interested in sales, right? Or you're interested in, getting into the command line and you've got that CS degree, that's going to be another pivot on top of the pivot of explaining that military time, right? So just be conscious about the way that you're going to have to draw those lines for people. You're going to have to interpret a lot of your background already for folks. It may make that even a more challenging transition,
Oh, 100% agree. If I could share something from my own transition here, a challenge for kind of shifting how you speak was tough for me. Dropping jargon was okay, because if you've served in a bunch of different commands and things like that, you've got to learn a whole new vernacular sometimes anyway. The toughest thing was shifting away from a we mindset to an I mindset. You know, here was the challenge that I identified, and I affected this change to drive this positive outcome. That took some practice. That took some getting used to, especially among leaders in our military. We do things as a team. We go together strong. You are dependent on everyone doing their job to the best of their ability. It was my impression at the time, and I've seen it since then, that potential employers are far more interested in hearing I, because they are interested in you. They're not hiring your team. Anything to add there? I assume it wasn't just Nick Panos. This is a challenge for a lot of folks, right?
I think the other thing that a lot of people forget is your written communication as well. And the important part there is not just speaking it, but like, don't send me an email to Miss Fall. Like, the tech industry is much more informal, right? Like, being able, like the ma'ams, right? Like, being able to drop some of those formalities, it's a much more informal culture here within the tech industry. So making sure you're being mindful of that. VR, very respectfully, means virtual reality in the tech industry. So when you sign your name very respectfully, it's actually coming across as virtual reality, Matt Gladney, right? So understanding like some of these like nuances and understanding the culture that, you know, that is important when you're making that connection as well.
Certainly. I was going to say, yeah, in relation to the shifting from the we to the I will say we do notice a lot that's where the imposter syndrome starts to creep in, right? Because you're so not used to being able to take the ownership for what you've done to push the ball down the field that sometimes you start to second guess your own kind of background and your own experience and how it lines up, because people aren't going to maybe see right away that direct connection. And so kind of reminding yourself, right, that like, that's not a determinant on your ability to do the thing or that you're, you know, not capable of doing said thing. It's really just all about how you're framing it, how you're talking about the experience that you have, being able to kind of let them borrow your confidence, right? Like, sure, to go into an interview and let them feel the passion that you have for it, the confidence that you have in your ability to do it. That goes a lot further than I think, you know, we think it does. And it can really shift the mood when you're in the room and start to kind of, you know, allow you to take a little bit of control in that way. So, yeah.
Fantastic, Matt. Really, really appreciate that, that insight and that context. So as we, we'll wrap this portion here and flow back into a more polished elevator pitch. For the sake of the example, our volunteer who is a Googler, who is a actually a veteran, Enrique has gotten these salient coaching points that we've just talked through. He's had a chance to do some reflection and is now delivering a better polished, more impactful, and time-constrained elevator pitch at the same virtual career fair with his CV. The CV is going to be the truth document here. Your elevator pitch should amplify what is on your CV. So let's take a quick look at how he does, and then we'll discuss afterwards. Hi, Enrique, and thanks for stopping by our booth here at the virtual career fair today. Love to hear a little bit about your background.
Hey, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it. I am retiring from the Navy after 20 plus years. In the Navy, I was an intelligence professional. That means sort of specialized in gathering information to support, customers within the Navy, end users, if you will. For education-wise, I was graduated from Stanford University with a degree in international relations, and then through the Navy, I got a master's degree in national security studies from the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey. Spent most of my time dealing with information gathering. Part of that also involves information validation, like, is this information correct? And then sort of synthesizing that either individually or with teams to support people that needed that information to do their job. And so accuracy was a really, really huge focus that we had to do. We had to do that, make sure that the information that we passed was accurate. My last assignment was a department head supporting European Command based out in Germany, but my team worked and supported a group out of the Joint Analysis Center in Molesworth, United Kingdom. We collected information, we synthesized it, we wrote it out into products, and then we disseminated it out to folks that needed it to do their job. And sometimes we had very short time frames we had to do that, sometimes we had more, but the focus was on quality. A lot of use of technology to do that, a lot of ability to sort of present that information both in written form and other types. So we had to sort of take that information and figure out a way to get it to folks that needed it. For this next phase of my career, I'm really trying to sort of continue that intelligence and information processing expertise that I've spent a lot of time developing. So whether that's corporate information or even public sector entities, I'm really interested in trying to continue that on.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that. It sounds like a wealth of information, or wealth of experience, rather, as an information professional. If you have a CV that you could leave for us, that'd be fantastic, and we'll be in touch via LinkedIn.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Wow. Quite a difference. So, Laura and Mac, what did we think?
I thought it was wonderful transition here. Like, he had a lot of the feedback that we took, he was able to kind of quickly iterate on it and make it in, which is, you know, a big reminder to get the reps in. I always tell people the way we think and the way we write is not the way we talk. So by saying these things out loud, it helps you really own and become more genuine and authentic in your own storytelling. I really liked, especially at the end, when he was able to give direction, right? He told people what it is that he wants to do next, what he's been doing that's relevant, and where he wants to take that and leverage those skills into this next phase of his career. When you have kind of a non-traditional background that people are not used to seeing or can't easily understand, they can tend to get a little creative and kind of pick you and pull, you know, wherever you want. And you don't want to do that. You got to lead people where in the direction where you want to go, and they'll follow you if you're just giving them the right information and the guidance as well. And I think he did that very, very effectively.
Yeah, fantastic. I was going to say, I love the way that he got right into what was most impactful, right? Like, I think in the initial one, he spent a lot of time trying to give us all the points of his career. And then this time it was much more focused, much more tailored and intentional, so that we got a better understanding of, like, okay, this is the skill set he's bringing to work with him, and this is how he's going to utilize that. So I thought that that was, like, incredibly strong. And if you're interested in being, you know, the next Enrique and you'd like to join our community, we would love to have you. So please visit us at breakline.org. Or if you're interested in exploring any of the partnerships with us, then please visit us at breakline.org/partners/partner signup.
Fantastic. Laura and Mac, thank you so much for your time and expertise today and leaning in for on a project that we all agree is quite important here, and that is support to veterans making a transition. And to those who joined today for Google's VetNet Career Week, thank you very much for your participation as well as your service. Thank you so much, everyone, and have a wonderful remainder of your day.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.